We are starting a new series today. I guess I'm starting a new series today, and you're coming along for the ride. A new series called Idol Factory, which is in fact about idolatry. And I can imagine that some of you may be wondering, why? Why would you do a series of teachings about something as primitive and outdated and irrelevant and unhelpful as idolatry? I mean, that's what people used to do a long time ago. Nobody worships idols anymore. That's irrelevant. And if your definition of idolatry is literally bowing down before a gold or silver or stone statue, then I could understand why you might ask that question. Well, there's still places in the world today where people do literally bow down before statues. It's not so much of a thing here in our city. It's the opposite, really, of what Paul experienced in Athens when he toured the city. We read about it in Acts chapter 17. He tours the city, takes a look around, and then he's given the opportunity to address a gathered crowd. And Paul the apostle, who loves to preach Christ, stands up and addresses the crowd. And this is what he says, verse 22 of chapter 17 in Acts. He says, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious." How does he know that? He knows that because as he walked around the city, he saw scattered throughout the city temples and shrines and monuments and idols built so that the Athenians could worship their many gods. There was an idol to Aphrodite, the goddess of beauty. There was an idol to Nike, the god of victory. There was an idol to Hermes, the god of the marketplace. Everywhere he looked, the city was full of idols. The city was full of opportunities for the Athenians to be very religious. I'm doing a series on idolatry because I believe that we too, not just those of us who sit in this room, but our neighbors as well, our city, we too are very religious. There are many gods in our city that we can worship. In fact, I will argue in this series that idolatry is just as much of a problem in our city today as it was in Athens 2,000 years ago. Idolatry is the fundamental problem of the human condition. It's the reason we're so miserable, so dissatisfied, so discontent. It's the reason that marriages and families and governments and even churches don't work the way they're supposed to. It's because of idolatry. Say, wait a second, I thought the fundamental problem was sin. It is, and idolatry is the fundamental sin. It's the gateway sin. It's the sin that opens the door and leads to all the other sins. There's a reason why in the Hebrew Scriptures, God is constantly reminding, constantly warning, constantly commanding the Israelites, don't worship idols. It's no accident that that's how God begins the Ten Commandments when he gives the law to Israel on Mount Sinai. In Exodus 20, we read how it all rolls out. It says in Exodus 20, verse 1, God spoke all these words to Israel. It says, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery." The Ten Commandments don't actually begin with idolatry. They begin with salvation. Before God commands Israel to do anything, he says, remember who I am. I'm the God who saved you from slavery in Egypt. I'm the God who revealed myself to you by coming to your aid when you were in big trouble, when you were in need. And remember how God did that. God did it by defeating the little g gods of Egypt. Every plague, every sign, every miracle, including the one at the Red Sea, all of them were designed to destroy the gods, the so-called gods of Egypt. God demonstrated his superiority over the Egyptian god of the river, over the Egyptian god of the sun, over the Egyptian god of life and death, even demonstrating his superiority over Pharaoh, who the Egyptians believed was a God-man walking among them, so that when Israel leaves Egypt, God has defeated all the little g gods, the so-called gods of Egypt. And then after salvation, he says, now that you know who the true and living God is, his very first command, verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. Notice he doesn't say, now there are no other gods. Not here in this context. That's a different discussion for a different time. He doesn't say, I'm the only God that exists. He simply says, I will not compete with other gods. I will not share you with other gods. You will have no other gods before, or some translations say, beside me. God says, I saved you, and now you're mine, and I am yours, and I want your absolute, total allegiance and loyalty. No other gods. That's primary, fundamental. Martin Luther observed that in order to violate the other nine commandments, you first have to violate this one, because it is the gateway sin. As soon as we open the door to worshiping other gods, some god that's not the true and living God, it opens the door to all kinds of other chaos and evil and corruption. It's fundamental. The second command, very quickly, God then clarifies what he means by worshiping no other gods. Verse 4 and 5, he says, you shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. In other words, anything else in creation, don't use any image in creation to make an idol. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. And then God goes on to say, if you do, you're going to get in big trouble. The consequences of worshiping false gods, of worshiping idols, will be immense. It will mess you up in every direction imaginable. And over and over and over again, God commands Israel. It's the predominant commandment in the Hebrew Scriptures. It's repetitive. It's redundant. Do not worship an idol. The prophets reinforce this by ridiculing anyone who would worship an idol. And I know we can get on board with this. Habakkuk, here's one example. Here's the kind of ridicule that happens in the Scriptures about idol worship. Of what value is an idol carved by a craftsman? Or an image that teaches lies? For the one who makes it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? Is it covered with gold and silver? No, there is no breath in it. Of course. This is the primitive definition of idolatry. Worshiping an image, an idol, you make it with your own hands, you form and you fashion it, and then you give it power over you. Then you call it God. Then you let it have authority over you. And the Hebrew Scriptures time and time again say, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. Why would you worship a lump of Play-Doh that you shaped yourself? Of course it's ridiculous. So why do a series about idolatry then? Because there's more than one way to make and set up and worship an idol. In Ezekiel 14, the Lord says to Ezekiel the prophet this about the people of Israel, especially the leaders of Israel. He says, son of man, these men have set up idols in their hearts. Let me hear you say idols in their hearts. They've set up idols in their hearts They put stumbling blocks before their faces. You see, you don't have to walk into a temple and bow down before an idol to actually worship a false god. We set up idols in our hearts. That explains the title of this series. It comes from a line from John Calvin. I rarely quote John Calvin. I am hardly a Calvinist, but I love this line from Calvin. He says, "The human heart is a factory of idols." You do not have to walk into a temple and bow down before a golden statue to be an idolater. You can manufacture and set up and worship false gods, idols, in your heart. And we do it over and over and over again. In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Colossians, he just makes a quick observation where he says greed is idolatry. In Ephesians, he says something similar where he says greedy people are idolaters. There's more than one way to worship an idol. You don't have to walk into a temple and bow down before a statue to be an idolater. So why do a series on idolatry? Because the opportunities to worship an idol in our culture are endless. We are very religious. Even though it's fashionable today for many to say that our culture is becoming less and less religious, maybe you've read those reports online that talk about the rise of the nuns, those who have no religious affiliation. They're not religious, they're nuns, as opposed to the nuns who are religious, but then never mind. They're nuns, no religion. And as that number grows, we're tempted to think we are, as a culture, becoming less and less religious. But I wonder if Paul would agree with that assessment. If he were to tour our city the way he toured Athens, do you think he would say, "Yeah, I can tell you're really becoming less and less religious as a people"? Or do you would think he would find evidence of our religiosity everywhere? He would not see anyone bowing down before the statue of Aphrodite. But don't you think when he poked his head in a few CrossFit gyms or health clubs or fancy spas, he would see more than a few youth-obsessed, radical extremists chasing beauty at all costs? Who says we're not religious? He would not see anyone burning incense to Nike. But if he walked around the halls of a few office buildings, don't you think he would see plenty of religious zealots sacrificing all kinds of things to win? Sacrificing integrity, sacrificing their family, sacrificing their health to get ahead and win whatever game of success they're playing. Who says we're not religious? He wouldn't see anybody paying tribute to Hermes. But don't you think he would see ample evidence of our deep religiosity when he walked one lap around North Park Mall? That the religion that would have us worship the God of commerce is alive and well in this city, in this culture. So why do a series on idolatry? Because we're all worshiping something. Every single one of us. We're all worshiping something. We're all giving something ultimate priority in our lives. Those who say they believe in God, those who say they don't, it doesn't matter. Everybody worships. Everybody organizes their life around something, focuses their time and their energy and their attention on something. We're all making sacrifices for something. We sacrifice something of value to get something we believe is of greater value in return. And the value may be in the eye of the beholder, but we're all sacrificing. And sacrifice is an inherently religious activity. We're focusing our time and our energy and our attention on a goal. We all have different goals, but we're all going after it. Could be success. Could be just trying to hold our family together. Could be maximizing pleasure, minimizing boredom. It could be numbing the pain. But we're organizing our lives around something. a set of laws, principles, ideas, stories. When we organize our lives, when we give priority to something, whatever it is that's bigger than we are, that draws us out and gives us something to focus our energy on, you know what you call that? You call it worship. And unless it's directed at the God who created all things, worship is just another word for idolatry. Why do a series on idolatry? Because we're all worshiping something. And the stakes couldn't be higher. Because we become like what we worship. Whatever we give priority to, whatever we devote our energy to, whatever we make sacrifices for, we become like that. We allow that to shape and influence our lives. We become like what we worship. Mark it down. It's one of the basic principles of existence. Psalm 115 says it this way. It opens with the typical ridicule of idols. Our God is in heaven. He does whatever pleases him. But their gods are silver and gold made by human hands. And these pitiful little gods. They have mouths but cannot speak, eyes that can't see, ears can't hear, noses that can't smell. They have hands but cannot feel, feet that can't walk, nor can they utter a sound with their throats. And then here's the punchline. Those who make them will become like them. And those who trust in them will become like them. We become like what we worship. Turn to your neighbor and say, you become like what you worship. Okay, this time do it out loud. Turn to your neighbor, say, you become like what you worship. Be careful what you worship. You become like what you worship. And you worship a blind, deaf, dumb idol. You become blind to the glory of God, deaf to the wisdom of God, dumb to the sound of God's voice, the truth of God's will. You become like what you worship. Worshiping the God of war will make you violent. Worshiping the God of sex will make you promiscuous. Worshiping the God of money will make you greedy. You become like what you worship. Why do a series on idolatry? Because all around us are false gods, idols, calling us to worship, vying for our attention and our allegiance. And I call these gods false, not because they don't exist, but because they lie, because they deceive, because they never deliver what they promise. They always leave us dissatisfied. Oh, initially there may be a hit there. It's like an addiction. Addiction and idolatry are synonymous. There's an initial hit there and we think we're getting what we want, but over time we get less and less return. And the gods we give ourselves to, instead of blessing us, instead of helping us flourish, they begin to eat us alive. Pledge allegiance to the God of intellect, and you will feel dumb. There will always be something you don't know. There will always be someone who knows more than you do. Pledge your allegiance to the God of beauty, and you will feel ugly. You'll never measure up. Pledge your allegiance to the God of safety and security, and you will be paranoid and suspicious and afraid. Because there'll always be another threat on the horizon. Why do a series on idolatry? Because the fundamental question behind the fundamental issue of idolatry is not, do you believe in God? It's what kind of God do you believe in? More than that, what kind of God do you trust? What kind of God do you worship? What kind of God are you organizing your life around to give your life a sense of purpose and meaning and value? To what kind of God do you turn to for mercy when you fail, for help when you fall, for hope when you're facing the darkness of death? That's what this series is about. And the bad news is, we are a very religious people. living in a very religious culture, and we are surrounded by false gods, idols, calling out for our worship. And it's easier to give your heart to an idol than you think it is. The human heart is an idol factory. But the good news is that the true and living God who created all things is not hiding. And he's not hard to find. In fact, he has gone to great extents to reveal himself to us. Just as he revealed himself to Israel by saving them from Egypt, now the God who created all things has made himself known to us in Jesus Christ. We don't have to wonder what God is like. We don't have to use our imagination and grab something from creation and fashion it together with our hands and call it God. This is what God looks like, because Jesus Christ has showed us. He's made known to us what God is like. And more than that, he showed us how to love him, how to serve him, how to worship him. Which means Jesus shows us how to be like him. So this morning, let's continue to worship God, the God we've come to know in Jesus, so that we can become more like the God we worship.